everybody, and welcome to episode 20 of the Divided by Werewolves show, podcast, what do you want to call it, whatever you want to call it, 20. So we are one, we can vote, and we can serve, but we can't drink yet. And we can't run a car in most states.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. So when my wife and I got married, we were young. I was 24. She was 23. And we went to Orlando on our honeymoon to Disney World, and we could not rent a car because the cutoff age was 25.
Wow.
Yeah, that's kind of a bummer on your honeymoon to have to rely on the Disney shuttle, where my wife got her open back sneezed upon by a preteen racist girl.
Ugh.
But that's a story. That's a story.
That's rough.
For another time. So anyway, I'm here, Mitch is here, and we have a bunch of stuff to talk about tonight. Of course, typical game stuff. We also have a couple of horror movies that we want to get into. We're going to talk about The Void, and I Am Not a Serial Killer. But before we get into that, I'm going to we're going to pivot over to Mitch because he's got something he wants to talk about.
Yeah, not going to spend a real long time on this, but I felt like it just want to talk about it just for a sec. You know, it's something that it means a lot to me, and you know, it's going to be hard to talk about, and I'm going to do my best to get through it, and you know, without crying again. But
hey, if you do, we can always take a pause, and through the miracle of post production, we can make everything seamless and brand new.
I like it. All right. So as most of the internet knows, or my internet, I should say, knows, last week we all lost a friend, James Harris, better known in the horror circles as Doc Terror. This guy was the epitome of what a horror fan should be, a community fan should be. I mean, he lived and breathed everything that so many of us loved, and he lost his battle with Ewing sarcoma, which is a rare cancer that he was diagnosed with about 2 years ago. And the outpouring since he passed of just love and support and just sadness from so many people. It's amazing. This dude was 36. And I mean, if we really break it down, social media hasn't been here that long. Mm-hmm. And for him to have touched as many lives as he did is just an incredible thing to me. I've never seen anything like it. You know, we have horror actors and these people that we, you know, put on these pedestals and they pass and everybody's sad, but I've never seen anything like this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think he's just a testament to the kind of guy he was. And so it's not just that people are saying, you know, saying things, that people are actually doing things. And so I wanted just to talk about a few of the things going on because, you know, unfortunately he was from New Jersey, so I never got to meet him. You know, I just worked with him on a website, you know, for a little bit. And, you know, even that was, he means so much to me, you know? And so, up north around like New York and Jersey, around the areas, there's all these things going on, and every bit of it, all the proceeds are going to his wife and their children, you know, for the, just, you know, for support and for, mm-hmm. I'm sure the medical bills are going to be insane and all those things that come along with a you know, the long battle with a disease like that. So I just, you know, I'm just going to talk about a couple of things. Pretty cool. And then we can move on.
Sure.
So I know Fright Rags, which is, I have like 50 of their shirts. They're a big deal in the horror sort of community. They're actually doing a Doc Terror t-shirt. Mm-hmm. And Jeff Zornow, who is a big comic book artist, most probably widely known for his Godzilla work, is doing the artwork on that. And they're donating all the proceeds to Nicole and the family. Exhum Film Festival, they're going to do a thing. And that's coming up in Philly on the 29th of April. And, like James loved Exhum Films, Film Festival. So they're doing a little special thing, and they're going to do same thing, give the money to his family. There is an all-night Italian Splatterfest at the Colonial Theater in Phoenixville, PA.
Okay.
And they're donating the – they don't give a date for that, but they're donating the proceeds to Jimmy. And then real quick, there's a charity raffle being put together by Chad from the Horror Movie Barbecue.
Okay.
And he's asking for, you know, just anybody who has anything horror-related, you know, who – wants to donate to this raffle. He's looking for DVDs, Blu-rays, posters, action figures, whatever you got. Mm-hmm. And he's going to do that sometime in early May. And lastly, like almost to the day that he was diagnosed, Danny Maz from the Shock Chamber, he created a GoFundMe for James. And I'm going to tweet a link to all this stuff out, so
yeah, and we can put it in the comments of the show too. So if you go to divided by werewolves.podbean.com, you'll see in the for the show description, we'll put links for all that stuff in there too.
Cool. Yeah, so that's been an ongoing thing, and I've donated several times myself just to that, and I fully plan on continuing to do so. But again, all that money's going to his family. So
very good. Well, we are very sorry for your loss, for what sounds like the horror community's loss as a whole. So, folks, you know, if you're into horror, which hopefully you are, because we certainly talk about it a lot, and you can, you know, throw a little cash the family's way, you know, certainly please do so. We know that there's a lot of things and a lot of things you could do with your money. I know. I personally have donated to a number of GoFundMes over the years. If folks who listen to this were a fan of JTS and they were a fan of Tom Chick, Tom went through something similar when he was diagnosed with throat cancer, and the GoFundMe that Stephanie Tinsdale set up for him helped pay for his treatment. So these are not scams. These are real things that help people in real ways. So
absolutely.
And obviously, you know, even just sending some good thoughts Mitch's way and the way of the family, you know, if you don't have any cash to spare, you know, that's cool too. All right. So, speaking of, well, we'll get to the horror movies in a minute. We're going to kind of start off the way we typically do, talking about games. I am still wading hip deep in Mass Effect Andromeda, only because I swear to God, this fucking game will never end. Like, I feel like, I would love to do. I'd love to actually talk to somebody that likes the game. I've talked to Jason McMaster, my podcasting buddy, on Twitter, and he really digs the game. And at some point, you know, I should talk to him more in depth because, I just feel like it's just a bunch of loosely related tasks all strung together in an effort to get you to reach some magical number of hours played so that it justifies not necessarily its existence, but it justifies itself when compared to other Mass Effect games. I'm not going to say the story is bad. It's an interesting story, this idea that, you know, you are supposed to be finding planets to settle, and along the way you find some aliens and they're doing bad shit. Like, I think that's actually a pretty cool concept. It's just that there's so many side missions and tasks, and I mean, and they're like, they're boring, tedious tasks. It's like, oh, hey, your crew wants to have a movie night, but apparently you're the only person who can buy popcorn and snacks and get movies. And then some other guy wants beer, and some other guy wants this thing. And so some of the tasks are like, hey, you know, this guy died and he really would want to be remembered at a particular place on a particular planet. And you're like, okay, sure. But other people are like, hey, man, you mind picking up my laundry? You know, like, shouldn't I have better things to do? Like, I'm the fucking, like, I'm not, this isn't like a Skyrim where you're like the chosen one. I mean, you're important, don't get me wrong, but you're not like, it's not like in the first three Mass Effect games, when you had all these side quests, they typically tied into preventing humanity from being wiped out from a race of killer robots. So you're like, okay, I'll do it. And here it's like, well, this settler needs some DVDs. And you're like, I don't really see how that's kind of, it seems a bit beneath my station.
Yeah.
And then it also, it just keeps going. Like, it just keeps going. Like, I have all these loyalty quests that I want to do, and being a Mass Effect game, I'm like, all right, well, I need to do them because I'm pretty sure there's some final battle, and I need everybody in top, in peak condition. But at the same time, they will lead you on, it's like, go here, then go to this planet, then go to this planet, then go to this planet, then go to this planet. And that's not one quest. That is a fucking ton of quests. And so I'm at the point now, this is where the, have you ever heard of the sunken time fallacy?
No.
Okay, so sunken time fallacy, and it very much applies to games, is the idea that you will continue to enjoy a game, or, and this is in relation to games, but in,
sure.
it's basically in generalities, it is that you should continue to do a thing, or you will enjoy a thing simply based on how much time you have already sunk into it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
You know, and that happens a lot in games. Like, you hear people say, well, I'm not a big fan of this game, but I've already spent 40 hours.
Yeah.
So I should just keep playing it. And right. That's kind of where I am right now, and I totally recognize that that's what it is. But at the same time, I'm like, I'll be fucked if I don't finish a Mass Effect game. I mean,
yes.
this is me. I mean, come on. Come on. I mean, but I'm going to finish it. But I just... I would like to talk to somebody who, like, genuinely likes it and isn't just, like, necessarily liking it because, for the most part, the reception wasn't great and they're just kind of pushing back against that.
Right.
And maybe it would be different if, like, I remember when the first Assassin's Creed came out, and I know this isn't, you know, I know Assassin's Creed games aren't your wheelhouse, but the first Assassin's Creed game, if you did everything, was fucking torture. If you just did the story missions, I'm sure it was probably great. And I remember on Penny Arcade, Mike Krahulik there, he really enjoyed it. And he was like, I didn't do everything. I didn't get all the stupid flags and all the side things and this thing. I just stuck to the main story. And if you did that, it was great.
Yeah, that's all I did.
So I don't know if it's that type of thing here. And I'm just kind of getting worn out by doing all the side quests. But at the same time, I have played plenty of games, Witcher 3 being one of them, where I did every side quest outside of the Gwent, the card game side quests, and I was like, yeah, I'll take like 20 more of these, please.
Yeah. So,
but it's kind of what I have at the moment, and unfortunately, the next game that's on its way is Persona 5, which I can't stream.
Yeah, that's weird. I didn't know anything about that until you told me about that.
Yeah, so Atlas disabled streaming natively on the PS4, and they have told people who stream with like an Elgato or something like that, that if you go past 7/7, which in the game would be July 7th, that they will come after you with content strikes. So, Rise, Son of Rome, Rise with a Y, is free via Games with Gold right now, so I thought I'd stream that, but you have already started it, and based on the length, potentially finished it.
That's actually true. Like it shows you like your percentage done, and it doesn't do like most games where it factors in all the collectibles and other bullshit.
Uh-huh.
It's straight up because it's such a cinematic thing, at least so far for me. But I've literally played maybe an hour and a half, and I'm almost 20% done.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because that was a launch game, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And yeah. How do you like it so far?
It's fun, it's surprisingly, and I don't know if it's because I'm so fucking tired of shooting Sicarios and picking up fucking intel files or what in Ghost Recon, but like I downloaded it the first of the month when it was first free, and I was like, eh, I was never interested in it because I'm not, again, that's not my sort of thing, the whole Roman thing. Like I'll do that before I will do something like Lord of the Rings and shit, but I don't get into that, but you know, like if it's historically somewhat accurate, I can get into it, and plus it's violent as fuck, and you know I'll get behind that anyway. Mm-hmm. So, I was surprised because it's not. I mean, you could button mash, sure, but it has that perfect balance of the fighting system. Whereas, like, if you just want to button mash, you can probably do that and get through most of the game fine.
Right.
But if you want to take the time to learn a not too complex fighting system, you could be a badass. Like, you could, and it's not that difficult to learn, and it's a lot of fun to fuck around and do the executions and all that fun stuff.
See, when I first saw For Honor, and I know For Honor is more of a fighting game, my first thought was, oh, this seems kind of like Rise. So I started following For Honor, thinking it was like that, and then I said, oh, I'll rent it. And it was on its way, and while it was on its way, I read more about it, and they were like, well, it's a fighting game.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, shit, I don't want to play a fighting game. What I want to play is something where I can just hack the shit out of people. And so I'm glad to hear that you can, if you want to treat it with some finesse, you'll be better at your job. But it's not like a For Honor where there's like a system of, you know, where if you don't kind of buy into the system, then you're going to end up screwed.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. It's a button masher if you want it to be.
Okay. So my plan is to probably stream that. While, like, I played Persona, it was either three or four Golden. I don't remember. Whichever the Golden one was, I played it on the Vita. And I had heard that Persona 5 was great, and it was a good Persona for people who haven't played much to get on board with. But my problem that I have talked about before on this show and on my previous show is that I get very I don't want to say OCD because it's not OCD, and I know people with OCD, and I don't want to like diminish, you know, kind of what they're going through.
Sure.
But I get really anxious about games where you have to divide your time between activities because I am always worried that I'm not spending enough time on the right thing.
Yeah, I do the same thing. Yeah.
And I also get somewhat anal about trying to knock off things on the list.
Yep.
And like, I'll actually like wake up in the middle of the night, like worried about it. I know it's stupid, but I will anyway. And so when knowing that Persona 5 is equal parts, you know, a dungeon crawler and a teen social life simulator,
right?
Even though it is supposedly the most newcomer friendly game in the series, I still kind of go, well, it may be that trying to figure out what to spend your social life hours on, that anxiety may end up, you know, kind of being too much for me.
Yeah.
I did see today that Ghost Recon Wildlands was like $35 on Amazon, so I was tempted to pick it up just to be like, well, it's something to play and kind of fall back on and shoot drug runners in the face, but I don't know. I think I would, I don't know. I guess I still have time if I wanted to.
Oh, yeah. It's going to do nothing but get cheaper. So,
well, that's the thing. Ubisoft games, it's funny. Like, if you're somebody like me who spends a lot of time, you know, kind of following how the value of games go up and down because, you know, you're constantly playing games and, you know, they don't give them away.
Right.
Ubisoft games, traditionally, they go on sale faster, and they hold their value for less time than other games.
Yeah.
And the only reason I haven't bought it is because Amazon was selling it, and if I wait for Best Buy to sell it for the same price, I get an extra 20% off.
Right.
At that point, it would be like $27, which I think at that point is kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, I bought it at 30. Like I said, I did the GCU, and then I had like two coupons or whatever I could use. So,
right,
I got it for $30 on launch day.
Right, right. I mean, I still have my save from before because I rented it and I just sent it back. So we'll see. Okay, so that's all the games kind of out of the way. So we have. We have a couple movies to talk about. Once again, I find myself watching a movie that Mitch indirectly recommended. So I saw you talking about The Void on Twitter. And I was like, well, if Mitch is watching a horror movie, then I need to watch this particular horror movie. And unlike other horror movies where – okay, I don't know how to say this. Okay, so this movie starts off as one thing, and then it turns into another thing, and then it turns into another thing, and then it turns into another thing. And then by the end of it, I don't know what the fuck it was. It was supposed to be, because when it first starts off, so The Void, it starts off with this woman escaping a farmhouse, getting shot by two guys, and then getting set on fire. And then there's a sheriff who goes to a hospital where his, I don't know, is his wife or his ex-wife? I don't, were they still together? I don't remember.
I don't remember.
Anyway, wife, ex-wife is a nurse, and bad stuff starts happening in the hospital, and the people who killed this woman come to the hospital, and then other people start attacking. And so it ends up, like, when it first starts off, I was like, okay, this is cool. This is like The Mist plus The Crazies plus Assault on Precinct 13 plus the original, not the original, The Thing, but the John Carpenter, The Thing, not the remake or the sequel. And then it went into, this is The Reanimator, and this is, all fucking over the place. But you still, with all of that, still really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love it. Number three for the year for me so far.
Number three for the year. Okay. So what is it? Because I'm not going to lie. I felt like this movie was like if you and I went out drinking, okay? So you and I go to a bar, mm-hmm. we start drinking, and when we start sober, we say, we're going to make a movie. We're going to make a horror movie. And it's going to have all the things that we love in horror movies, and it's going to be great. And then as the night goes on and we keep drinking, we keep remembering horror movies that we enjoyed and start finding ways to include it into our horror movie. But we only get drunker as the night goes on, so the ideas get weirder and weirder. And then the next day, we actually make it.
Yeah. Somebody gives us $5 million.
Somebody gives us $5 million. They recorded the entire conversation and they said, this is the movie you want to make.
Yeah.
Go make it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's every. So people either love this thing or they love to hate it. That is the first criticism. There are two criticisms. First of all, that there's too much and none of it makes sense. And second of all, there's no plot. So I don't agree with no plot.
I do not agree with no plot at all. That is not a criticism I would put against this movie.
There is a plot.
Yeah.
And it's not hard to follow, like I've read. For me, it wasn't. Now, if you're one of those people who wants their movie, like everything explained, everything laid out, you're not left to draw any conclusions for yourself, or if you have to have that like wrapped up in a bow kind of thing, this is not your movie. Like, it's not explained. It's sort of one of those things where, to me, like the more batshit crazy it got, the more I loved it. Because it's just like, it's one of those movies where I like to sit there and just be like, what the fuck, man? Like, I dig that so much. Like, if it's something that just goes like to the next level, like every 10, 15 minutes. I mean, sign me up. I love it. Because I'll sit there and I'll make my own movie out of it, you know, if I have to in my head.
Right. And I was totally on board with that at the beginning. I will be perfectly honest. Because essentially, what those movies that I talked about, like I've mentioned this before. I've mentioned as a kid reading a copy of Fangoria magazine and being like, this is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like these nasty ass things that this cat's making, like Rick Baker, this is what I want to make. This is what I want to do for a living.
Yep.
And I remember one of the movies in that issue of Fangoria that I swear to God I read until the fucking pages fell out. And I don't even know how I got my hands on a copy of it, because no way in hell my mother would have bought that. Was The Thing.
Yeah.
So too young to watch The Thing, but I already knew everything about it. Those movies that I mentioned, The Crazies, Assault on Precinct 13, The Thing, those are some of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. And The Thing is one of my top five horror movies of all time.
Oh, absolutely.
And so when this movie first started, I was like, abso-fucking-lutely, I am totally picking up what you were putting down. And then when it got into kind of the Reanimator stuff, I fucking love Reanimator.
Yes.
But as it went on, I was like, okay, somebody at some point needed to step in and be like, okay, guys, enough. We've got enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would not at all say that there is no plot. I wouldn't say that at all. If anything, I think there's too much plot. I think there's certain things where you could be like, okay, wait a minute. So this entire time in this town, there are these series of tunnels under this hospital and this crazy-ass cult, and nobody ever found out about it?
Right, yeah.
Like, I think that if you want to find issue with the plot, and I don't agree, I don't necessarily mean that in the way that of somebody who might need all the questions answered and everything wrapped up in a bow. I just mean like kind of some basic things. I think those are valid criticisms.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, if you're like, hey, you know what I really love? Hellraiser. And they're like, really? Yeah. We got that too?
Yeah.
We love Hellraiser. Come on board.
Well, and I, part of that has to do with the writer and the writers and directors, because, you know, I don't know how familiar you are with Astron 6 and those guys.
No.
See, this is one of those movies where, like, I didn't know you were going to watch it, and I wasn't going to say, hey, watch The Void, because it's one of those ones where it's I don't want to hesitate to recommend it, because I enjoyed it so much. But at the same time, I always take into consideration that there's no way people are going to love this as much as I did, or most people.
Well, you know, here's the way that I look at things like this, and I mean, I'm a big fan of I mentioned him before, Tom Chick. He has influenced myself as somebody who's critical about things more than probably anybody else. And one of the things that Tom said, he said about games, and I feel the same way about movies, is I would rather watch something interesting but flawed than something, and I'm paraphrasing here, something that is kind of rote but just executes well. So The Void is absolutely perfect in that regard. Do I feel like the film had problems? Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
But was it doing something that I typically don't see when I watch movies, horror or otherwise, in terms of how many things it was trying to put in, and not entirely unsuccessful? Like, I don't want folks to get the impression that I feel like this was just some weird kind of jumbled mass. I really feel like it successfully managed to combine a number of different great horror movies / genres. It's just that by the time it got to the end, they should have stopped about two-thirds of the way through. I feel like they probably should have committed to what they had and just continued telling the story with what they had rather than piling on, you know, more stuff, more.
Sure.
And so, but I would much rather watch something like this that took, you could tell these guys love horror movies, and
yes,
they
sir.
Had a ton of different influences, and that they just tried to put them all together in one package. And for me, it wasn't as successful, but I'm still really glad that I watched it, because it's better, 1,000 times better than some fucking focus grouped PG-13 mass market horror movie that they're trying to, you know, they're trying to market to as many people as they can, but then ends up being tepid and something you've seen a million times before.
Absolutely.
So I would watch this thing a million times before I would watch, like, The Ring 5, whatever the fuck it is. So, yeah, absolutely.
So, like, this is the thing. Like, I would, just like you said, if I was given money to make a movie, and I'm thinking, hey, man, how many opportunities am I going to have, right? And these guys are an art director and a makeup guy, an effects guy, right? And that's exactly the kind of movie that an art director and a makeup guy would deliver, given some money and, you know, who knows when we're going to get to make another movie. So, I forgive it for that to an extent. And then, man, if you've not seen, like, Manborg or Father's Day, you know, even the – did you watch Turbo Kid?
Yes, I did.
Okay, cool.
Turbo Kid, yeah.
Did you see the ABCs of Death 2?
No, I watched – I don't think I've watched that anthology. I watched the VHS anthologies,
yeah,
but not ABCs.
Well, the Turbo Kid is based on a segment called W is for Wish in ABCs of Death 2, and – like, these guys directed that segment.
Oh, okay.
It's fucking incredible. Like, it's like a kid looking through the wish book at Christmas.
Mm.
But he, like, this shit is real. Like, it's like, you know, Transformers, G.I. Joe, that kind of shit, like, from the 80s. But, you know, and Turbo Kid was birthed from that. So, you know, it's the same thing with this movie, Harbinger Down, that came out a few years ago. And that was done, when you talk about The Thing, the last thing, the prequel or sequel, whatever.
Which I never watched.
It was okay. Everybody's like major disappointment was that it was so CG.
Yeah.
And what really sucked was they tested with this group of guys who did some amazing practical shit and just were like, hey man, this is all we've done, you know, and we can do this. We can make this a practical movie just like the other one. It could be something special. And they were like, yeah, no, we're going to do CG.
The Thing worked as well as it did because, in part because of the practical effects. Now, I mean, it was a different time. They didn't have a choice.
Right.
But the practical effects were so incredibly well done that it makes you glad that the movie was made when it was, because it wouldn't have had the same impact if it was done with CG.
Right. And that group of guys did Lance Henriksen's in this movie called Harbinger Down. They basically took all the shit they made for The Thing and made their own movie. And it's just like The Void, not plot wise, obviously, but it's this movie that is so effects heavy and so bizarre, but it lacks any real, like, the story lacks any real direction. It's very, you know, just sort of like, okay, more special effects, more special effects. And I loved it. Like, it was so fun to watch, but it's like, people are like, The Void. They're like, man, there's no story here. You know, it's there's no point to it. And I could see that, but I just, it's so much eye candy for me that it doesn't bother me.
See, and I don't see where people would say that The Void had no plot. I think it was pretty clear what was happening. I think there was just a lot of stuff to it. And I think that's a valid criticism if you want to say, well, it was just overstuffed. There was too much plot.
Yes.
Now, you know, whether or not that the plot of the movie worked for you is a, you know, it's a different thing entirely. And I think, you know, I think horror movies it's weird. And in some ways they get a pass, but in other ways I feel like they don't. To the same degree that a superhero movie would get, right? Like you watch Captain America,
yep,
and somebody explains to you, well, you've never seen Captain America, and somebody explains to you, oh yeah, he was like the scrawny kid, and they put him with the serum, and they hit him with something called Vita Rays, and then he turns into this muscle pound guy, and then he gets locked in ice, and he's got like super speed and agility, and he's not bulletproof, but he can take a bullet, and he can run through and bust through walls and all this shit, and he fights bad guys. And most people watching that movie be like, yeah, cool, all right, let's let go. But horror movies, when you're like, okay, there's this guy, and he slashed, and he died, and then he comes back, and I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, what do you mean he comes back? You know, yeah. Like, I feel like there is just, among the GP, the general population, there is kind of a certain amount of looking down on horror movies that don't allow for the same just kind of acceptance of stupidity that we do in other movies. You know, so I feel like sometimes horror movies kind of get a bad rap for that. At the same time, you're like, why is she running in heels through a forest? Why would you bring heels to go camping? or like, how many people need to die at Camp Crystal Lake before you go, you know what, maybe let's go somewhere else. It's funny when I hear people complain about movies not having a plot. I'm sure that there's plenty of movies that they like that don't have a plot. And I know that it all has to do with, you know, what's grabbing you at the moment. In certain movies, you're kind of willing to forgive, you know.
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm really, you know, as problems. You know, I'm bad about that.
Right. Right. But I mean, when I was done with it, I didn't feel like I've watched certain horror movies where when I was done with it, I was like, okay, that was a waste of 90 minutes.
Oh, sure.
And I don't feel like that was the case with The Void. It's just that, and I think on a subsequent viewing, I probably would enjoy it a lot more because I kind of knew, you know, now that you know what to expect.
Right.
It's going to be kind of all over the place.
I can't wait. Shit crazy. Like, I think Diabolik got the rights for the Blu-ray, and I'm already pre-ordering it. It's like, it's not that expensive, and I cannot wait to watch it again. So I'll eat that disc up when I get it.
Yeah, I would very much like to watch it again, because, you know, there's certain parts of it where I would like to just kind of see, watch another pass and go, all right, well.
Oh, man, and imagine a commentary. Like, that would be the first thing I'd do is commentary on that.
I will say, though, I love the last shot. Absolutely love the last shot.
Yeah.
You know, it's really weird. Nowadays, when I watch a horror movie, I am equally torn between whether or not I want it to end well or I don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like Devil's Candy, I knew how I wanted that movie to end.
Yeah.
And I thought it was going to end one way, and I was so happy that it didn't.
Same here.
Same thing with Get Out.
Get Out,
like we talked about before. Get Out, I was like, oh, shit, I do not want this movie to end with him getting shot or arrested, and it didn't. I was like, okay, thank God.
Yep.
And it's because, you know, audiences, I think, at this point are somewhat trained, especially with horror movies, to expect a twist. And, well, what is the twist going to be? For a horror movie, is the twist ending that somebody gets away or that they don't? You know, and so, you know, it's good because, you know, I think dread is the appropriate emotion to feel while watching a horror movie.
Yeah.
But The Void, I honestly had no idea.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to feel or want to have happen at the end of this.
To go back to Devil's Candy is what Devil's Candy did better than just about any other movie I've seen this year, and it's character development.
Yes.
I actually cared about that family, whereas the characters in this movie, I was like, where's the fucking cult? You know, it's like,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, Devil's Candy, I think, is one of the best horror movies. I think for me, probably since, in terms of family, not characters, but as family, probably since The Babadook.
Yeah.
In terms of setting up, like, you rooting for this group of people as a family unit.
Absolutely.
So The Void, definitely watch it. If anything, watch it and take a drink.
Yeah.
Get your favorite bottle and take a shot every time you see a reference or something from another horror movie. I guarantee you will be passed out before the movie ends.
Yep.
Okay, so the other movie that I watched, and you said you've seen this one before, is I Am Not a Serial Killer. So this was a movie that I had seen, I had read about, I guess a year ago, and I had seen that it had come to the various streaming services. And for me, it was mostly because Christopher Lloyd was in it. It's from 2000, I guess last year.
Yeah, 16, yeah.
Yeah, 2016. It's about this kid, and when I say kid, he's a teenager, and he is kind of drawn to death and serial killers. And honestly, aside from the fact that he worked in a mortuary and he kind of felt like he could have been a serial killer, like, this kid was totally me when I was a kid.
Yep.
I loved serial killers. I mean, I don't know if it's just like, I don't know if that's typical. Okay, let me put it this way. When you were 11, did you subscribe to Psychology Today? Because I did.
No, I didn't. I did read Helter Skelter, though.
Because I was completely fascinated with serial killers, and I wanted to know, like, why they did what they did. So my mom, she got me a subscription to Psychology Today, which, I mean, in retrospect, that was probably not at all even remotely. It's not like they have an article in there on, like,
Yeah, right.
But I like Ted Bundy and John Wayne Gacy, and like Eileen Wuornos was passed when I was, but like all Zodiac Killer,
yeah,
Charles Manson, Helter Skelter, like I ate that shit up.
Yeah.
And this kid here in this movie, he's drawn to death, and it doesn't help that his mom and his aunt own a mortuary, so he's constantly like surrounded by corpses that he's helping embalm. But he talks to a therapist, but he kind of, at first they make it out as if he feels that he is in danger himself of becoming a serial killer. So he has all of these rules that he follows to make sure that he doesn't hurt anyone. And I think the movie did a pretty good job as it went on of showing that despite what he felt about himself, when push came to shove, he actually did care about other people,
yeah,
more than what typically you would expect from someone who turned out to be a serial killer. So whether or not he just felt like he didn't have a connection to other people because he was young and his home life, like, you know, his dad wasn't around or what, but people start getting killed around his town, and he sees Christopher Lloyd and thinks, okay, I think this guy has something to do with it, and starts kind of ingratiating himself into Christopher Lloyd and his wife to keep tabs on him. And then it kind of goes from there. So at the same mm-hmm. time, it's like a kind of your like indie weird kid, weird teenager movie. At the same time, it's a small town, Minnesota. So like a small town life movie. And it is also a serial killer movie. And it's a monster movie. and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really well done. I thought Christopher Lloyd was great. And I like the guy, the guy who played the lead there. I forget his name. Max Wright.
Max, yeah.
Yeah, he played John Wayne Cleaver. I thought he was great. He had the right combination of, like, you felt bad for the kid at times. You genuinely questioned at times whether he was, you know, kind of mm-hmm. maybe what he felt he was. Like the one scene at the dance,
yeah,
where he was talking to the other kid about all of the rules that he has for not hurting kids, I thought was fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
But I liked it a lot. I don't know. When did you see it?
It was literally the second new movie I watched this year. I did my thing. I think I talked about it before, where I go through and I'm like, all right, I start watching all everybody's best of the year list and shit. And I start checking off, trying to get a hold of the things that I missed and, you know, things maybe I didn't see or whatever. And so the first thing I caught was, The Autopsy of Jane Doe. And then,
I haven't watched that one yet.
Oh, it's excellent. And then this one was, I watched the very next night. And I knew nothing about it at all, other than that it showed up on several people's best of the year list, not towards the top. And I tend to do that too. I start towards the bottom and work my way up. Mm-hmm. And this one, you know, it wasn't at the top of anybody's list really, but it was, you know, top 10, you know, at least. So I was like, all right, well, I need to look at that. I knew nothing, never heard of it. I didn't read anything about it. It was on Netflix, so I clicked on it. And
yeah.
Next thing I know, Christopher Lloyd shows up. I'm like, oh shit! And like,
yeah, and then I knew like, about it from the AV Club because they had written about it.
Okay. And you know, when the little twist happens, when the kid sees it for the first time, I was like, oh shit!
Okay, let me ask you about that. So the twist that Mitch is talking about is you know, John, he follows Christopher Lloyd and he watches him, and it looks like Christopher Lloyd is about to be attacked by somebody else, and the next mm-hmm. thing you know, what looks like some kind of like some T2 shit where he takes a blade out of his hand, goes out and stabs this cat through the chest.
Yeah.
When you saw that, I rewound it and watched it again.
Mm-hmm.
When you saw that, did you think that actually happened, or that was some kind of delusion that this kid was having?
Well, yeah, exactly. Initially, I thought this kid is like, he is really fucked up or something like that, because based on the name of the movie and what had been presented at that point, I thought Christopher Lloyd was probably just some poor old dude, you know, and maybe he was up to something, but not what this kid thinks, but this kid's like going to make himself think he sees these things and shit. Because I thought that's the way the movie was going to go.
Okay, good. I'm glad I'm not the only one. Because I had to, like I said, I rewound and watched again because I was like, wait a minute. Did he actually see that? Because,
right.
And then later on, Christopher Lloyd kills a couple other people in a similar manner. And I'm like, okay, I don't think at this point this kid's hallucinating.
Right.
I mean, I think he's genuinely killing these people. Whether or not he's killing them in the way that it looks like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, okay, good. I think that's kind of what they were setting it up to be.
Is I do too.
You're never quite sure what he's seeing. But and the only reason I wasn't sure about that is because, you know, typical what John was saying felt that he was a sociopath.
Mm-hmm.
And sociopaths typically are not delusional. So usually delusions, whether audio or auditory or like they're, you know, they have visual hallucinations.
Right.
That's more of like a psychotic type of thing. That's not typically like a sociopath. So that was the only reason why I thought, wait a minute, no, I think he's actually seeing this.
Right.
Because kind of what he felt he was wouldn't necessarily have jived with delusions.
Gotcha.
But that being said, I think that they did a pretty good job with setting it up in such a way that you weren't really sure. Mm-hmm. And that's the important thing because, mm-hmm. you know, that scene takes place about halfway through the movie.
Right.
So if at that point you knew, or at least definitively knew, you know, that this kid – you know, wasn't heading down the path he felt he was, I think it probably wouldn't have been as enjoyable. But if you
right.
like, no, I think there's something going on here.
Yeah.
It might be in his head.
Yeah, it made me interested in reading the book, actually, because I wonder if it being compressed into a 90-minute movie, maybe they didn't get to explore that as much as the book might. I don't know if it does or not, but I know it's based on a book, and it made me really want to read it because I'm wondering if it explored that a little. If it had, you know, yeah, took more time with that.
Yeah, that's a good, really good point, because depending on whose perspective it's from.
Right.
You know, if it's from John's perspective and he's like, I don't know if I just saw what I think I saw,
mm-hmm.
then yeah, they definitely could more drive home that idea that maybe he's not kind of in his right mind. But yeah, I mean, you know, most of the time I use streaming services because, you know, if you flip through the horror section of Netflix, it's like it. You could just tell every, you know, 90% of it is just a movie that is derivative from something else. They're just trying to
yeah.
make a quick buck because they saw something that was successful, and they want to replicate that. And so it is the same thing on like Amazon Prime. So I use most of the time I use streaming services for getting caught up on TV shows that I missed.
Yep.
But occasionally, you know, you have movies like this where, like you said, you hadn't heard of it before, or maybe you saw it on a best of list, and then it's there, and it's so awesome when that actually happens.
Yes, it is.
because so many times have I flipped through and been like, "Well, I'll give this a try," and I watched, and I was like, "Oh, holy shit, what is that?" Like, I
right.
think honestly, like if it wasn't for the fact that I don't think, first of all, I wouldn't wish this on anybody, but I don't think I could last. I think it would be a great show, like a podcast, to start, just go through on Netflix, just pick a different horror movie every week
mm-hmm.
and watch it and then talk about it.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get some really good ones, but then you're going to get some really fucking awful ones.
Right.
And just try to find, you know, the good thing
yeah.
in it.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I'm so, down for that.
we may get to that at some point. But yeah, I enjoyed it. And I mean, you know, I don't know if Christopher Lloyd genuinely looks that old. I mean, he's getting up there.
Yeah.
But he's or if they just kind of made him up to be older. But, you know, Jesus, dude's showing his age.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I almost didn't recognize him. It took me a second. I was like, wait, is that Christopher Lloyd? Like, it took me a minute.
Yeah. And it's a really good role for him because it's – I think most people remember Christopher Lloyd from Back to the Future.
Right.
And this is so not that. But he was really good in it. Good, I mean, everybody – yeah. Everybody was really good, and it was extremely well done. So that's available. I know I saw it on Netflix. I think it's on Amazon Prime as well, but I can't guarantee that. So what is next then? If you're going through a list, do you have
I'm past it. I'm not sure what I'm doing next. I did watch Officer Down. I would be glad to talk about that with you if you'd like to
Officer Down.
Subject yourself to that one. It's hard to recommend, man, but I had a blast with it. It's done by Clown of Slipknot. He wrote and directed it.
Oh.
And it's like, I don't know if you like Trauma, that kind of thing. Trauma is an acquired taste for a lot of people.
I don't know that I know.
All right. So it's like, if you're familiar with Trauma and Uncle Lloyd, it's like somebody took like $2 million and gave it to Uncle Lloyd at Troma and was like, make me a movie based on Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh.
It's this completely ultra violent, over the top. It's ridiculous. But it's about this cop who, his name is Officer Terrence Down. He's played by Tig from Sons of Anarchy. I don't know the guy's real name. I forget. Kim Coates.
Oh, yeah.
Kim Coates.
Okay.
So he plays Officer Down, and Officer Down is this guy who, he basically is Judge Dredd. Like he's just I am the law.
Uh-huh.
Only they send him into all these like suicide missions, and he always dies. And they bring him back to the station where they have these like, I don't know, this like cult or these like psychic people, whatever the fuck they are, and they resurrect him. And he gets up and he puts on his uniform and he's I am the law, and they send him right back out.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's taken down the crime family and whatever the city's in. And so like the heads of the crime families are straight up G.I. Joe villains. Like there's three of them. There's a woman who wears a tiger mask or leopard mask.
Of course.
I can't remember. There's a guy who wears this black lion mask.
Sure.
And then there's a guy who has a vulture mask. And
sure.
It's never
like, Hotline Miami.
Right. And it's like it's never explained if they're wearing masks or if they're supposed to be really animals because the mouths move on the mask when they speak and all this shit. But it's batshit crazy. But it's probably, I don't know, the most fun 90 minutes I've had in 2017.
And it's called Officer Down?
Officer Down, D-O-W-N-E.
Well, I'll have to check that one out.
I watched it, and it's on Netflix. I watched it, and it's I was like maybe 15 minutes in before I got on my phone and bought the Blu-ray.
Well, I will definitely have to check that one out then, because you know me, I'm always on the lookout. But yeah, Officer Down. Well, all right. For me, I'm really disappointed. This is the first Fast and Furious movie I haven't seen on opening weekend. In quite
that's long. Right. I read that. I couldn't believe you didn't.
Yeah, my wife and I know this is like the suburban bullshittiest thing ever, but we got a gang of shit we need to sell at a garage sale this weekend. We were waiting
gotcha.
For the community-wide one, and it just takes a long time to get everything together, and so we haven't watched it. And my wife, when she loved Paul Walker, and I think for her, that's when the franchise ended.
Sure.
When he passed.
Sure.
And I'm like trying to get her to still go, and she's like, well, we'll just watch it when it comes out on Blu-ray. And I was like, what the fuck? Watch it when it comes out on Blu-ray. Ride or die, motherfucker. What the fuck? Come on, son. Put my wife a quarter mile at a time. This is what Paul would have wanted. Paul wouldn't want you sitting at home selling shit at the garage sale. Come on. But then when I heard, you know, the reviews were just kind of okay.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, I think she's okay with waiting. So we'll see. I mean, I'd like to go see it in the theater, but I also know that we're starting to get into summer movie season, and then that makes it more difficult. So.
Yep.
So we'll see. But, you know, next one in the theater for me is definitely Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and I know you're looking forward to it as well because
– I guess that'll be mine too.
Because you're such a huge fan. And then maybe we can get Todd to come on the show and we can talk about it.
That I am looking forward to.
Yeah, absolutely. So for us, this has been episode 20. Thank you so much for hanging out. And kind of all the stuff that Mitch talked about at the top of the show, we will throw into the comments of this particular episode. So please, you know, send some money, some time. Do what you can. We would both very much appreciate it. And I don't know if you follow us on Twitter, but I announced that this show is available now on iTunes. So please tell your friends and, you know, like and comment and subscribe and all that bullshit. And, you know, see if we can get other folks subscribed to, and you can listen to it on your commute or at work or wherever the hell you degenerates listen to our ravings anyway. But as always, we very much appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us, whether it's on the show or when we're streaming, playing Overwatch or whatnot. So every little bit helps. So for myself and Mitch, thank you again. We will be here back again in 2 weeks, and we hope that you are here with us. So good night and have a good evening.